everyone. This is a call to actions. I am your host, Bobby Vaughn. No longer calling myself Bobby Vaughn Jr. I've learned to accept that it's okay to be named after your dad. Anyways, I'm here today with the one and only Aaron Franz. And to those of you who don't know who he is, he's a pioneer in research and investigating into the ethics involving science and technology. He's authored the book Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, and also has created and manages the Age of Transitions podcast and Uncle the Broadcast. So anyways, Aaron, it's really good to have you back. This is the third time we've had conversations together, and I'm looking forward to many more. How are you doing?
Doing well, Bobby. Thanks for having me back here.
Oh, yeah. Well, the times we live in, need I say any more? In the name of COVID-19, we're starting to see just the social structure collapse and change completely. And a new rollout of advanced technology is really starting to show its face. You know, we will talk about that and the different technologies that have been unleashed to the public. But just to start out, how did you and why did you get into investigating the ethics in advanced technologies?
It's something that just kind of happened, I guess. I was a member of a 9/11 truth group in Columbus, Ohio. And so I was very much into that, everything involved in that, and looking up alternative information, I guess you'd say, and all sorts of stuff that a lot of people don't like to look at, but I was very much into that whole thing and just looking up all sorts of different topics at the time. And I just kind of stumbled upon transhumanism. I remember finding the Wikipedia article on the concept of transhumanism and reading about it. It was blowing my mind. I was like, oh my gosh. And then I just immediately, when I read it, I kind of connected the concept in with the greater concepts of, you know, there's a lot of stuff wrong with the world, basically. That's the long and short of it. It's like, there's a lot of stuff wrong. There's a lot of problems. It's accurate to say that there is such a thing as oligarchy. And so I just kind of, I did that. And then from there, I just started reading a lot of stuff over the years. You know, the transhumanist websites, like the former World Transhumanist Association, that's what they were calling themselves at the time. I would read a bunch of stuff off their website. I would find the different members of that group and other groups and, like, read white papers that they published to get an idea of what they were all about. And then I read all sorts of other stuff, like government white papers and papers from universities about related topics, all sorts of different topics, and then reading books. I'm just, you know, just reading all that stuff and getting into that and other topics which seem unrelated, but I like to notice how everything in the world is related to everything else somehow. And I just like to try to go for the big picture and understand those relationships and kind of see how something like transhumanism is more than meets the eye, so to speak, right?
Absolutely.
I guess that's the answer there.
And the technologies that go into the development of what's considered transhumanism are, you know, in the name of health, medicine, or war.
Yeah.
These technologies
national security.
Yeah, in the name of national security. That's a good one. Yeah. You know, let's start researching these technologies and developing them. And let's, first test the technology on our soldiers or on, have some clinical trials performed on the American population, one or the other. And then if it's deemed that it could be a, quote, benefit to society, the technology is then released into the public.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to see that right now with the company Boston Dynamics actually releasing their Spot four-legged robot into the public for public sales at a low discounted price of only $75,000, something like that.
That's probably just the base price too. You can get all the add-ons for it to do specific functions.
Yeah. I think right now they have, according to their own shop, their own website, Boston Dynamics, they have six different add-ons. Mm-hmm. The most expensive one that's provided here on their site that they're not selling under the rug is an inspection application. Spot Cam Plus adds a pan tilt zoom camera to the Spot Cam to enable detailed inspections, and even LiDAR. LiDAR is just such a, in my opinion, a bad and extremely unhealthy technology. you have these Spot robots now. Okay, they've been released to the public. From what I've seen, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, this robot Spot is the most advanced artificial intelligence that has been released to the public that's actually movable in a robotic form, as opposed to a computer. You put a computer on legs and send it out on the streets, and you have the Spot robot. But it took a long time to develop the Spot technology, and it's really interesting to see the timing that they released the Spot four-legged robot to the public. Have you seen anything like that before? I haven't.
I guess you could. I mean, it has to be one of the most advanced autonomous machines that has been released in this way and is now commercially available. So to this point, yeah, it may well be the most advanced one. And it's got an interesting history, Spot, and just the company Boston Dynamics. And I think Boston Dynamics has cultivated quite a bit of brand identity, and the marketing for this thing over the years has been very good. So I think that people recognize this thing just due to seeing it so much in videos online and its predecessors in videos online. So I think as a company, from a marketing standpoint, I think Boston Dynamics has actually excelled, and that's why we just immediately know of it and when it's released, and all these viral videos of the thing go a long way in helping them. I'm not sure what their profits are on this thing and how much money they're making on it, but initially, I mean, this is born straight out of their older projects, which were directly funded by DARPA, and the company itself was a spinoff of MIT to begin with. And that kind of went back and forth, the ownership between a Japanese company and Google. Like, first this Japanese bank, I think, owned it, then they sold it to Google's Alphabet, rather, which is the same thing as Google, really. And then Alphabet sold it back to the Japanese company a couple of years back. So it's just this, it's fascinating to me because it's one of those perfect examples of public and private intersection, and it just exemplifies how these technologies are born and how they emerge into the commercial sphere. they make their way out into the commercial sphere from initial development through the government. And of course, the U.S. government is the military primarily. So it was the military defense budget that built this thing. And so, yeah, I mean, this gets on to a bigger topic of conversation, which gets me going, too, is, you know, you'll get people talking about how socialism, like, oh, that evil socialism. Like, well, this country is socialist, if you think about it. Like, you got these big government funds going into these projects. And then, in the end, somebody ends up, Boston Dynamics ends up profiting on it. But they do it on the backs of, the U.S. taxpayer, the U.S. government, and so I've heard it. I've heard our system described, and I think this is perfect. That American capitalism is socialism in the service of capital. If you follow that, I saw Jay or who was it? J.P. Satilli posted that once. I was like, oh, that's the perfect summation of our system. Yes. So I don't know. There's something there.
I'd say, and the walk up, no pun intended, the walk up to releasing this, what's known as the spot, into the public, it took a little while, beginning with the, and who knows what came before this, the big dog. And, you and I, we're about at the age to where, we were tapping in enough at the time to actually, we probably shouldn't have seen it. It was kind of reserved more for companies who were interested in buying the product or investing in it. But we were at the age to where we actually seen the first videos of the spot, the big dog being used and for military purposes in attempting to carry heavy payloads to a soldier on the battlefield. And the videos at the time, they really creeped me out, for a lack of better words, to see the big dog actually learning how to balance itself when being kicked by a researcher. And you remember those days? That was how long ago was that? That was about maybe over 10 years.
It must have been like 10 to 15 years ago, those particular videos.
Go on.
No. That's it. Keep going.
Even a corporation that was involved in that. I was in high school at the time. I was taking a class called Jobs for Illinois Graduates in high school. I didn't get to choose it, but one of our projects was to link two companies together, showing that they're working together in kind of like a joint venture, or linking one company to another, and the diversity of their products. And Foster Miller, the company that makes fruit gushers, was actually one of the corporations I was involved in funding the research and development of the big dog. And I did a little project on that, linking fruit gushers to the advancement of the big dog. So that corporation was involved. But what most people don't realize is that, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that Google Alphabet has deep roots in the research and development of military technologies. It's not all just yellows and reds and oranges and blues. They have some pretty interwoven roots and tentacles. So flash forwarding to the present, now it's been unleashed to the public. There are different applications for it, including LIDAR, which is a more broken down, like smaller, compact version of radar. And in the name of COVID-19, we're seeing overseas in Europe where the Spot, a four-legged robot, is actually being used to ensure people are socially distanced. What level of control that is, you know, people are taking direct orders from a robot on the streets. Like, this thing's become some type of mechanical policing system. It's weird to me.
Yeah. And LIDAR, if I remember, is like, it's like radar, but it works on lasers somehow. Utilizes lasers. And it was the technology used in all of the like those early, again, DARPA defense projects of autonomous vehicles. So they'd have all those vehicles that were attempting to be operated autonomously, and they'd have those they had those weird looking things that looked like headlights on the front of them, like these big cars, essentially cars, and like some of them looked like heavy machinery or like military tanks and stuff, and they'd have those headlights, and kind of like the headlights on a Corvette that flip up and down, there'd be like a set of four of them, and they'd be flipping up and down, and that was the LIDAR kind of moving around so that it could so that it could sense its surroundings. I just kind of know about that. Do you know any more about that technology in particular, Bobby?
LIDAR, no, you are right about it being laser-based, like a laser-based type of radar. I know the frequencies that it uses are deemed unhealthy to an individual that's exposed to it for a long period of time. I know military radar operators, there's a trend among military radar operators becoming sick because of being around the electromagnetic frequencies for so long. But then I'm a little concerned about people and any potential operators of the LIDAR system, long-term exposure of LIDAR. It's kind of weird to think about. I mean, you know, the vision system of these machines are cameras. And then what type of sense would the LIDAR give the machine? It's kind of like a laser-based like sonar almost, but sonar is different. I mean, there are mechanical ways of installing sonar. So, yeah. I mean, it's just a different type of sense given to these mechanical operations.
Yeah.
Let's see. So you wrote the book. Just moving on a little bit. Of course, we can talk about that more. You wrote the book "Revolve: Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood." I like the cover of the book, and you know, the serpentine spiral staircase is really symbolic, and it's great how you pick up on like a symbolism, and it's a cult connection with the high technologists and the transhumanists. That's an area that is rarely talked about, the connection between occultists and transhumanism. Is there any area or subtopic there that you would like to talk about, and where did you find that connection? Such an interesting dynamic.
I'm trying to remember exactly where and when I first noticed that, but I mean, over the years, it just kind of pops up here time and time again, and you just look at the idea of transhumanism and you understand it connects to a lot of occult concepts of, like, for instance, just simple things like the concept of becoming, which is sort of man attaining apotheosis, like attaining greater and greater levels of I guess being or whatever, till eventually you become one with God, you know, however you view that, you know. So the concept of becoming, and just the idea of becoming a creator as well. So the idea of developing things like AI to the point where it becomes artificial general intelligence, and then of course the transhumanists talking about the creation of super intelligence, where the AI system actually becomes more aware and more intelligent than us at a rapid rate, and it becomes like a machine god or whatever. So, and they use these terms. They say, yeah, we're going to build gods. So they talk like this. They'll say, sometimes they'll be like, oh yeah, there is no god, but we're going to make god. They like to do that. They like to incite people. So that's a fun thing for them to do. They're constantly doing that. So, I mean, the it's kind of obvious as soon as they start talking about that. But at the same time, it's also a topic that kind of lends itself to being able to disguise that fact, because it's supposedly in the realm of science. But it's also like just so out there. Like, it's such an offshoot sort of cultish branch of, you know, this sort of just greater worship of science, generally speaking, in society today, which is just sort of like a mainstream sort of thing. But this is definitely like a niche-y fringe group within that sort of larger trend, I'd say. But yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of connections. And you look at particular people who are prominent transhumanists, and clearly they have an interest in occult things. And there's just a number of people that again, you just look at the things they do and the things they say. It's like, oh, okay, I see that. I have eyes to see. I have ears to hear. So I understand what you're getting at. I don't know how many other people, first of all, care what you say. Second of all, among that small little group of people who are actually watching or listening to you, I know it's an even smaller group that are picking up on the esoteric subtext of what you're presenting here. And there is a lot of it. And so, yeah, the cover of my book, Revolve, it doesn't even have... I mean, if I was smart, I'd probably put like some scary Terminator-looking robot. And instead of calling my book Revolve, I'd call it like Transhumanist Technology Coming to Kill Us All. I would have called the book that or something. I would have put a Terminator robot on it. And it probably would have sold better. It probably would have gotten more attention. But I put, you know, Jacob Bohm illustrations and William Blake painting on the front. My own little sort of remix of those old art, alchemical artworks, and called it Revolve. I mean, scientific guys got it. And it's, you know, unless you really are aware of, you know, the stuff that I do already, you're not going to even have any idea that it's about artificial intelligence and nanotech and life extension, all these transhumanist technologies. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of proud of the fact that I went that direction too. So,
writing a book is, I mean, you know, with that on top of everything else, you know, especially having a family and everything, that's it's a massive undertaking. And actually, you know, completing a book is something that's just really a triumph. Yeah, going back to the Spot robot, Boston Dynamics, they were bought out by the Japanese company, yep. SoftBank. And I'm looking at the robots, one being Pepper, which is has a little smirk on its face, you know, some moving eyes. It's a white thing that kind of looks like the Jetsons robot, except it's just, you know, pure white with what looks like an iPad on its chest. It's like, hey, like, I'm here to serve you, you know, with a touchscreen on my chest. What should I do? You know, point to what I should be doing. You know, I'll help you. I'll navigate you through playing a game of Family Twister.
okay.
Those type of things. Yeah. Here recently, in places like I don't even remember the last time I've been to Walmart or but there are autonomous, I guess, cleaning robots or something. My friend Steven was telling me about some autonomous robot that's like checking inventory, which is a little strange. It's kind of clunky. It looks pretty much like a big like a big blocky buffering machine kind of thing.
I see videos of these posts on people's social media all the time. I know the one you're talking about. It's like a wide base, and then it's like a pole almost that comes up from the center of it and just kind of goes around the store. Is it that thing?
Yeah, it has a yeah, it has like a little, looks like a little like police light on the top of it.
A lot of times they'll like put a little like happy face like with googly eyes on the top to make it more inviting and whatnot. I've seen that often.
Yeah, I mean, to the upcoming generations, they may be inviting, but I mean, our generation, we're kind of in a weird spot. I mean, the generation, a couple generations below us, sorry, one generation below us, is I think they're more like more up for this technology, and then the generation before us just has no idea, most of the times has no idea what this technology is, and we're stuck somewhere there in the middle to really in a good position to give an ethical standpoint, if we're willing to take a good look at it.
Yeah, I thought about that too, the generational thing, kind of where we're in a really odd sort of spot where we came before a lot of all this, but we kind of came after a lot of, I don't know, the things that were. It's just a weird sort of position. We're like sort of the last ones in certain respects to live in a world without like just such ubiquitous computing, I suppose, and ubiquitous media. And I mean, it was already starting. The thing was, it was very much starting when we were young, and we got to see the kind of lead up to a lot of different things. Like just the birth of video games, for instance, is a fascinating topic. But yeah, it's a weird point in time. But I've thought about that a bit myself. Funny that you mentioned that.
Well, yeah. We kind of think alike on a lot of things, which is one reason I like to have you on the podcast. Kimberly was asking me, she's like, is Aaron as deep into this as you are? I'm like, he's probably deeper into this than I am, to be honest. I mean, he has a few more years. He's a few years ahead of me. When I want to talk about advanced technologies and all that, I mean, you're the go-to guy, in my opinion. I haven't seen anyone else really give a good display or a good representation of a philosophical standpoint. And going into philosophy, I mean, it's weird to bring robotics and artificial intelligence into philosophy, because most people think of philosophers as talking about they think of like 200 years ago type of philosophers. But here we are 200 years from the 200 years from the past, and we're talking about the integration of synthetic life and man-created intelligence. And
Yeah, I mean, really, the only appropriate way to deal with those topics is via philosophy. I mean, you can't really even do it any other way. If you're going to have some sort of conversation about those ideas, you have to bring philosophy to the table. So, in a sense, it's good that philosophers are, on this. But then again, when you're talking about like philosophers that are themselves like identifying as transhumanists and things like that, like, well, okay, it's good that we're recognizing that philosophy is necessary here. But, of course this guy's going to be like, well, I'm going to tell you that we live in a simulation. I'm going to convince you of it. And, of course there's bias there, but I mean, just, just buyer beware, essentially.
Exactly. I hear a lot about, well, not here, but just the information comes across my table. Scientists believe there's a 50% chance that we live in a simulation.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that recently. And that's just a rehash of something they've been saying for years and years. They've been saying that for at least 20 years. Nick Bostrom, who used to, he was the president. I think that he was the leader of the World Transhumanist Association, which was president for a number of years. And he put out the research paper saying exactly this. I think it was titled The Simulation Hypothesis, where he says this. He's like, oh, yeah, it's very likely that we're just living in a computer simulation, which I understand where they're coming from. But I think this as well, you can clearly see the corollaries, the relations to occult and religious concepts, certainly from like the Vedic tradition, things like this, of the concept of Maya, the world's an illusion, and things like that. So, and definitely all sorts of occult esoteric concepts and things from occult groups. So it's just another way of saying the same thing again. And now that we have computers, we're like, oh yeah, a computer is a thing that runs a simulation. So that means that this simulation that that is existence that we all are part of is generated by a computer, you know, instead of a god or what have you. You know, it's just, again, it's just different vernacular. It's just a changing of terms is all it is. So I don't know, it's just funny to see that pop out. I was amused to see that article, and the fact that I was pretending like it was like some new development. It's like, man, they keep saying this over and over again.
Speaking of simulations, I mean, we have the transhumanists that have invested their time, money, resources, and mind to investing in these type of technologies. And I think once they get to a certain point, they're completely convinced that there is no turning back from advancing this technology. I mean, it would take a serious breakdown of these individuals, a complete head change to just completely, you know, to keep them from going down the path that they were going down. And you know, if it wasn't for these guys, we wouldn't have teenagers implanting RFID chips, or the potential for a physical app store on the corner. You know, just go down to the app store and get your new upgrade or your new implant. When simulations get involved, trying to convince the public that we live in a simulation is absolutely ungodly and goes against everything that I believe. I absolutely do not believe that we live in some simulation, but it helps their agenda by convincing the public that it's all artificial and electronic. And from that point, the population may start to invest more and give up and start investing more in these transhuman and posthuman technologies.
Yeah, I agree. That sounds about right.
Yeah, it's such a weird one. Yeah, you brought up Nick Bostrom. I'm glad you did. He's one of the head honchos, and they do change the name of their groups quite often. And I think probably the best way to keep a group as secret as possible is to not even have a name for the group. But I think that their ego is so high though that they want to keep a name. You know, they want to be part of some cult, and they just keep changing. I remember Humanity Plus, which was a lowercase h, cursive looking, with a plus symbol, was their symbol last time. Do you know if they've changed it since then?
Well, I'm on the website of H Plus Magazine right now, so there it is a magazine. It turned into a magazine. This is spun off of the original human WTA, World Transhumanist Association. it became H, it was Humanity Plus, and then from Humanity Plus, they shortened it to H Plus because they make this little logo. So it's all, again, these are all just marketing and branding techniques is what they're using here. And overall, I mean, you could say they're marketing their publication here. I have no idea how well H Plus magazine does these days. I don't know much about it. But I do know that in the greater sense, that what they're marketing is the concept of transhumanism and their ideas of that we have to develop emerging technologies and that this is a necessary thing. And you're talking about some point that we cross where there's no turning back. I mean, well, that we're there for sure. We're well past that. And there's no changing the minds of the people that are these folks that are identify as transhumanists. And again, it's hard to keep track of who they are and what their name is, but it is pretty fascinating to see all the different directions that the many different individuals go in that have named themselves as part of the movement. And the sort of the infighting and things like that is interesting to see as well. And just who's doing what in the business sense, like the business side of things like cryonics is fascinating to see the Moores, Max Moore and Natasha Vita Moore, and how their company Alcor was related, how they related the company and the relationship of the company to these groups like World Transhumanist Association. And so there's all sorts of intricacies there. But again, overall, the most important thing is the ideas, which transcend all these people, all their little personal interests, because there's plenty of them to be found. Guys like Ray Kurzweil being huge spokespeople, but also, you know, creating careers for themselves, becoming getting super cushy job at Google as the technology whatever he is there. I don't remember what his basically his title is, the guy that gets to talk about transhumanism on behalf of Google.
That's
what he does. So nice work if you could get it, you know.
And with dudes like Peter Diamandis, you know.
Yes.
Look
yes,
at that. He has another. I just want to pinch Peter Diamandis' cheeks and just smack him. wake up, you lunatic. Gosh.
Well, yeah, you know, there's I mean, you can't, they can't do it. They are invested in it in more ways than one, like personally, financially. It's their career, you know, so there's no going back for those guys. But I mean, why would there be? So, I mean, they just are who they are. So I think it's fun just to like call them out on the silliness that they constantly put out there. And, you know, the hypocrisies, all of that stuff. So it's not hard to do. And I always find it fascinating how Kurzweil actually got to be the spokesman that he is, because he's just totally lacking charisma. I feel like that's something that this movement really hasn't had yet. There have been like these guys who've come in who have had charisma, but it's been so over the top and like sort of Tony Robbins-esque, that's just been like too cartoony. Like, I feel like they're waiting for the moment where they get their big star, and they've tried to do it for a while. And even Natasha Vita Moore tried to like sort of like put herself out there in the public sphere. It's like, look, I'm an interesting person. It's like, well, no, nobody really wants to see you. We're sorry.
That's true.
They want somebody like that. They want like, I don't know. They wish like Jim Carrey would start talking about their ideas and be like their guy or something. You know, I can't help but think that they're hoping to do that, but just they've continually failed up to this point. Now, at some point, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, Joe Rogan has been good for them. But they have a weird tenuous relationship with him too, because of his sort of right wing leanings. A lot of them like don't like him and are speaking out on him because of that. But in terms of like promoting the transhumanist ideals, I would say the most successful in this sort of commercial media sense has been Joe Rogan. He's very much a cheerleader for all of this stuff. He has been for years and years and years. Not many people have noticed that or understand what that even is, but I would put him as like the number one guy in being successful in a media, pop culture, popular sense. You know what I mean? I would say that he is the guy. But going into the future, I think there will be more of this, and we'll get... They've tried it with Sophia the Robot, too. Like, oh, let's make Sophia a star. It was kind of weird. And it's a story, sure, and it gets press. But it's not like, you know, Sophia the Robot is not Mickey Mouse or Mario or something like that. So, I don't know. I love viewing this from the lens of marketing and public relations, you know what I mean? Because it's that's huge.
Yeah, the concept of neuromarketing and harvesting data off of, you know, individuals' profiles or, you know, search preferences from their computer or elsewhere, and, you know, targeting a certain ethnicity or a certain group of people to be swayed into believing something. I think, you know, that's definitely down the realms of convincing people that transhumanism is all right, and it's the way of the future. I personally do not believe that transhumanism is evolution, though the ones that are pushing the agenda believe that it's the next step in humanity. I think true evolution comes from what we already have built into us organically. How do we upgrade our organic senses through spiritual tuning? I don't think, you know, taking the products of our own hands and implanting them into our nervous system, or attempting to create new senses with silicon and titanium and software is going to upgrade us.
Well, you know, I'm sorry to break in here, but this is one of the points where the esoteric sort of occult thing pops in again, too, because you get these guys working on all these projects, and like the Kevin Warwick over in England, trying to develop things like synthetic telepathy. So get these new technologies made where we're able to communicate like mind to mind via whatever this tech ends up being, you know, and they talk about this. And when they do, they're actually hearkening back to this mysterious place in prehistory, which is, again, also alluded to in all sorts of, you read like religious texts or just occult writings, it's always alluded to as like this sort of lost states of man. One of them being this sort of primordial and superior form of communication that got lost, kind of like as the Tower of Babel was built, you know? You know, one interpretation of that is that language as we know it and use it in the modern sense sort of came to supplant this previous form of communication, which I think is meant to be telepathy.
Yes.
I think the concept there is that there was this natural telepathy between humans, and that was like the communication, like an unspoken communication form. But then as if you view prehistory and just the development of man in the esoteric sense as going from like a higher level in the past, and then as time goes on degrading, the de-evolution sort of way of viewing that,
Yes.
And then the way you do that is that the original form of communication was lost. This new language was put in place, and now with these transhumanists talking about, oh yeah, we're going to develop a technology which is synthetic telepathy, it's the return to that paradisical sort of that ideal which was lost in our mysterious past, right?
Yeah, but it can't be more of the opposite. It seems, rather than looking inside of ourselves and coming more in tune with what we've lost, it's the opposite. It's building something that is manufactured and has a barcode on it and putting that product into the mind in an attempt to replace it. I mean, that's a good excuse by them to attempt to replace it, when actually they're just, you know, they're using animals, first of all, and then humans.
I agree. It's a simulacra of something that I think is quite likely real in reality. Like, I don't know, and here I go getting off into kind of a crazy topic. I don't know what your thoughts are on
it. Nothing's too crazy here, man.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm not sure what your ideas on telepathy are, but my personal one is that it's a real phenomenon. I believe that I've observed it in my own life. I'm not saying that I have these long, drawn out telepathic conversations with people, but it's just little things here and there that I've experienced. It's like, oh, okay, there does seem to be something there that I'm convinced that it's a real phenomenon. And then, you know, if you're going to go further and say, go into the past and say, like, oh, it must have been this way, and I don't know for sure, but I just do believe it's there. And then it's just fascinating to see all these different sort of takes and these veiled allusions to these really powerful concepts. And again, just kind of making it seem boring and mundane, and taking all of like the wonder and magic out of the human experience, and then just diluting it down to, oh, we need to do a science experiment one day so we can put chips on our heads so that we can talk through the chips. It just becomes that, you know what I mean?
Taking an organic feature which was once sacred and just completely raping it and manufacturing it.
Yeah, degrading it.
And who's in control? You know, with these implants, of course, some are what are the words? There's the master slave system in electronics. You know, there's give and take. You know, you can take orders and then also give orders to the machine. And I think going into the future, what is that called? I can't think of it off the top of my head right now.
Are you talking about in like computer science? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah, there's the receiving orders to the implant.
Yes.
or the implant gives orders to the nerves.
Yeah, I can't think of the industry jargon on that, but I know what you're referring to, but I can't pull up the jargon myself on that, unfortunately, but it's definitely there.
I must have misplaced that memory somewhere. I'll dust those cobwebs off one of these days. I'd say just to let the listeners know, digging into this topic, once you really start to dig into to artificial intelligence, I mean, first of all, artificial intelligence is a lead up to transhumanism, posthumanism, and the creation of these mechanical synthetic life forms. Once you start to get into it, once you start researching and you build up your own morals, you're pretty much in it for life. And you know, you may have to take a break from it because it becomes so heavy that it becomes mentally shocking at some times, you know, some points. I'm sure you went through that when writing Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood. I know that, you know, I wrote an article entitled Humans and Androids, Cold Metal, Cold War. And just doing the reading and research into writing that article, I felt like I was having post-traumatic stress just going through that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, it ebbs and it flows, to say the least. You got to step away for a while and then kind of come back to it.
You have to. You have to. If you stay in it for a long period of time, it'll just... It's a heavy load. It's a heavy load, and I think that's why so many people just don't get involved. They won't take a stance. You know, they won't take a stand. You know, let alone speak their own opinion on it. It's easy to just go along with it because it's one of those fringe, kind of underground things. You know, most people in society just go along with technology and the trends. Then those who have been in the trendy social groups for a long time, you know, they'll go along with the more underground technologies. And, you know, these are the transhumanists. I mean, there is a difference between transhumanism and futurism. Futurism, it's one of those other words that some people. That our transhumanists will just claim that they're futurists. Futurism to me is interesting because it doesn't always involve transhumanism. It's as a way of looking into the future and like what can we do to save the future. It's a really highly divided group of people. You know, some people, you know, like ourselves being here to you know, save the future from these potentially invasive technologies, because take a step back and you see where these technologies are going. Most people don't have that ability to just take a step back and look at this, look at the social conditioning, where it's already led people, the research and development that's occurring now, and if this research and development is continuing to become socially acceptable, where is it going to go and how is it going to affect people? And it's really important to look at it like that, and I really appreciate your take on it and your stance. And you almost have 300 podcast episodes on Age of Transitions right now. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's it's been a long-term project, and that's, talk about ebb and flow, it definitely has over the years. Like, there were periods where I was just producing one a month, where I'd even be gone for a couple months, but I'm at the point now where, thanks to my producer, Chuck Ocelli, you know, I'm doing the weekly show, so there's always bringing a new show every week, which is really good, and again, I have Chuck to thank for that, and but yeah, it's one of those things where it's just been a constant sort of project, but you have to approach it that way. It's like, you know, you got to do it at your pace. You don't want to burn yourself out. I mean, this stuff is intense, so you don't, you got to jump in there, dive in there at times and just get fully in, but then you also have to get out and just live your life. So it's an odd choice of something to do, but I'm an odd sort of person, so I guess I'm the right person to do whatever this is. I haven't even entirely figured out what it is that, I have my ideas about this, but may end up being something entirely different in the end. So far, so good. I feel good about it, and thank you, Bobby, for the kind words with everything.
Yep. Yeah. I'll continue to listen to Age of Transitions. It's one of my favorite podcasts. There's another one out there. It's not technology and occult based. You know, it's not really an investigative podcast. But Age of Transitions pretty much is my go-to, to be honest.
Cool.
Yeah. So, like, you know, knowing that I'm going to have a new episode every week is awesome. And how do people tune into your live show, and when is that broadcasted?
Yes, the live show is Friday nights on Ocelli.com. Again, that's my producer's website, Ocelli.com. There's a chat room, which is really cool. You can join the chat room. You can call into the show, and it airs 10 p.m. Eastern time. Here on the West Coast for me, I start at 7 p.m. So, you know, just depending on your time zone, tune in at the right time. Go to Ocelli.com. There's a little Listen Live tab. If you press that, you get access to a chat room. Join the chat room because there's a lot of cool people that regularly show up. So that's always encouraging to see people show up time and again. Call into the show, you know, if you have a question or you want to just join the conversation. It's always open phones Friday nights. And then the live show, I just take the file and put it on the podcast feed. Then the live show is a podcast. So you pick up the podcast at Chuck's site and also my site, theageoftransitions.com. It's on tons of podcatchers and apps. So easy to find, easy to subscribe. So I hope people will. And yeah, thanks again for having me on here, Bobby.
You're welcome, Aaron. And I challenge my listeners to invest in independent investigative radio. I mean, you know, we're doing this on a shoestring. We're doing this as a public service. You know, we don't do this to make money. It'd be nice to make money doing it. But, yeah. You know, like, seriously, invest in independent media. And there's no more independent media than the Age of Transitions podcast. And, Aaron, it's always a pleasure. We'll be in touch. Thank you for your service to humanity and the planet.
Likewise, Bobby. Take care.
All right. High five from Northern Ohio.